Welcome back to this week's installment of Expand Your Mind and Be Kind. Thanks for joining Ryan and I on our adventure, and I hope everyone enjoys our episode. Thank you. Today's quote is from Buzz Aldrin, who is the first man to set foot on the moon. He said, "Exploring and colonizing Mars can bring us new scientific understanding of climate change, of how planet-wide processes can make warm and wet world into a barren landscape. By exploring and understanding Mars, we may gain key insights into the past and the future of our own world." And he also says, in a novel that he wrote with John Barnes, Encounter with the Tiber, "There's not a place in the universe that is safe forever. The universe is telling us, spread out, or wait around and die." Ryan.
Jim, it's time to talk about things not of this world.
Spaceballs!
Yeah. I am your brother's father's sister's former roommate.
What's all that churning and bubbling? That, sir, is Mr. Coffee.
Did you hear that Pizza the Hut died? Ate himself to death.
In his limousine.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to discuss space today and travel within space and just provide some general thoughts. So, Jim, where would you like to start this conversation?
First, let me light up this huge ass blunt first.
Yeah.
JK, I actually am not really a user, so.
Yeah.
So I thought we'll talk about space travel, but specifically humanity's fixation and hopes and dreams to travel to Mars and then maybe one day colonize it. Or if you're extra ambitious, there's people that believe that we can reignite the core of Mars and make it a lush, like, rich planet again. But that's far off. So I feel like you and I, we share a similar childhood dream of being space travelers, and, you know, we've always been obsessed with like Star Trek and Star Wars and the possibilities of traveling to new worlds. And I don't know, it piques the curious and explorative parts of us, and humans in general. You know, we've kind of like explored all of our rock, as it were, of Earth, and we're looking outward as our technology advances and things are becoming much more a reality. I think it's safe to say right now that humans are obsessed with getting to the planet Mars.
Why do you think that is?
I think humans just that have a natural urge to explore. I think our imaginations and our ambitions just force us into expanding and pushing our boundaries. You know, we're always going to have that mentality, and I think Mars is a natural target because it's close to Earth. It's relatively the same distance to the sun, roughly, and it's that big red dot that we can see in the sky with our night sky with the naked eye. And so I think in the previous like missions, and the unmanned missions obviously that we've sent to the Mars, like all the rovers and the orbiters, have collected so much data, and it's just teased humanity with the possibilities of, you know, starting a colony on Mars.
Yeah. One thing that I've pretty much always been interested in, I like you have had a deep fascination with space and planets and stars and solar systems and galaxies and all that kind of thing. I've just looked up at the stars and looked up at the sky and wondered, like it's going to sound cliche, but like how small we are in comparison to like what we can see, and it's all perspective. You ever seen that video where it's this person that's it's like a zooming out video of it shows a person and then it shows Earth and then it shows a solar system and then it shows galaxies and
Oh. No, it starts on the cell level. Or like
right. That's what
on
I
the
mean.
atomic level. It starts on the atomic level, moves up to the cell, moves up to like the tissue, then the organism, and it just keeps going out like
Right.
infinitely. It's insane.
Yeah. So that kind of just gives you some frame of reference. But with that being said, I've always been interested about the fact that there's about 80% of our ocean floor that's been unexplored, and the reasoning along those lines is more because of the intense pressure that's present with exploration, and that makes putting any sort of craft or vehicle to explore down there pretty difficult because, I mean, the bottom, like thinking of something like the Marianas Trench, that's 7 miles deep, which doesn't sound like a lot until you look at a map of the perspective of what that looks like from a topographical standpoint, and it is insane. Anyway, I don't want to get too far along those lines, but that was something also that was interesting to me is that we look upward, and part of its practicality from an exploration standpoint, but that there's still so much of our own planet from an ocean perspective that we haven't been able to look at. But it's more feasible to send people to space. I just think that part of it's interesting.
Well, I think there's a good number of research teams that are doing deep sea research, but it happens at such a slow pace because you're right, the high pressures and the you know what I'm trying to say,
Yeah.
of the ocean floor is so great. But I feel like that is of a smaller minority of people who are wanting to just get every bit of our ocean floor, but like most people who are looking to explore are all looking up to the stars right now. And that's
Yeah.
like showing in companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin, and
And Jim and I are starting our own
we're gonna
company,
call it
a
Gemini.
competing company.
Actually, that's a pretty
Jim, J
decent star company name, Gemini.
yeah, or Jim and Rye.
Yeah, Jim and Rye has a better, yeah, definitely better ring to it.
But yeah, so we'll post our Kickstarter at the end of the episode. So
Right.
wanna.
Also, we have a disclaimer that says we don't have to spend the funds on a star company, so your investment is safe.
Right. So the other part that I wanted to dig in a little more on is, do you think that this is just an innate sense of travel itch, or do you think part of it has to do with the practicality of people thinking that our planet fairly soon will be uninhabitable?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Like why have for the same reason why the humans like why the humans why we as humans
Jim's an alien.
jokes on you have been so fixated, you know, ever since basically the rocket was reality on getting out into space is because it piques our curiosity, and we cannot not explore it, if that makes any sense.
Sure, yeah. I think definitely does. What is the term for like wanting to travel? Is it called wanderlust?
I think that is a term, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I
used
guess
to
there's
describe
not
people that
the
have to
term.
travel.
Yeah, I just, yeah, because I wonder, like, when we first became what we consider now humans, if that was just like, oh, I wonder what's out there. And then they just explored Earth from the, like, just ground level, of course. But I bet it would be difficult to imagine that even our, like, ancient ancestors didn't look up at the sky and think, other than like, oh, that's probably some sort of god that's like in the stars, but like what is that? You know, there's a lot of really beautiful poetry and different things that ancient philosophers used to describe, you know, the heavens and things like that, which that part of it has also been really interesting and captivating to me, is that we in modern times are the first people to have left the planet. But the thought of like what's out there has been around for a really, really, really long time.
Well, all of our planets in our solar system are all were all given their names in the ancient times. Like the current planet names are were named after the Roman gods. Mars was the god of war, and I don't because they've all been able to see them because a lot of them are visible to the naked eye at certain times of the year, or most of them are. But no, it's really interesting how for how long humanity has been fixated on the planet Mars.
Yeah.
Because I th part a part of it is I think it's the one that stands out the most in our sky. Have you ever looked up and seen Mars on a really clear night?
Yeah, it's really neat.
It is, dude. It almost it, like it physically glows red. It's super cool. But anyway, let's talk about like SpaceX, NASA. Let's talk about what their goals are, actually getting down into like the modality of getting to Mars. Like is it plausible? What's the time frame looking like it's going to be? What's the plan?
Yeah. So SpaceX seems to be the leader front runner in this endeavor. And you mentioned a little bit ago off the podcast that 2026 is kind of the first target of sending a manned aircraft to Mars.
Yeah, so that like barn silo that we've all seen on the news that they've been testing, that's actually kind of like the prototype for the craft that SpaceX creatively is going to name Starship. That's actually its name. So their plan is to basically attach that barn silo onto the Falcon Heavy rocket, which we've seen kind of in the tests and stuff as well, and the actual successful deliveries to the International Space Station. They're going to launch those together out into outer space. They're going to do a concurrent launch of a like a resupply of craft that is going to meet Starship above, like in our orbit, give it enough fuel to get it to Mars. Because if you were to launch with all that fuel and supplies in on Earth, it would be much harder to get it off the ground. So like by refueling up in space, it kind of makes that easier, makes that more doable.
Yeah.
Then Starship is going to set a trajectory for Mars, which it'll be about a 6-month trip just because of the limitations of, our propulsion systems right now. It's going to land on Mars like it does on Earth, so it's going to flip over and land vertically. And base like things ha that have already been sent to Mars before the human mission goes, equipment will provide a resource base where the rocket can refuel and allow a return to Earth, because it's not going to need as much fuel to get back to Earth, because it doesn't need as much fuel to get out of Mars. Mars's relatively weak gravitational pull and atmosphere.
Yeah,
and it'll land back on Earth, and probably a rinse and repeat. That's their kind of their time or their explanation for how they're going to send manned missions, return trip manned missions to Mars. Because I think we've kind of always assumed that if the first humans to go to Mars, it would probably be a one way trip, like a suicide mission. But it's looking like that with the technology that we have now, it's looking like that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, that people will be able to come back, mm-hmm. barring any setbacks or issues that arise. Yeah, I think it's very easy, I think, from the perspective of science to use all these different calculations to think like, oh, well, we've kind of covered every scenario. I think that might be one of the only areas of my life where I'm a little bit skeptical and pessimistic is, you know, when it's one thing to have like planning is important, but having a plan is kind of dangerous because you're assuming that all of those factors are going to be static or constant. And who knows? But yeah, I'm optimistic that that's even a possibility within our lifetime that will happen.
It's a cool thing to know that, you know, even pessimistically on the planning, it'll happen within the next 10 years. Like, we will have humans that will have set foot on the red planet, the planet that has seemed so, you know, so far from our grasp for the longest time.
Well, and
within the next decade.
We say the longest time. When we've been thinking about space travel as a human race, we've only been pursuing space travel in the way that we're pursuing it now within the past like 100 years.
Right. It's a new thing for humanity, relatively speaking.
But
I mean, the first Mars or moon landing was what, like in the 50s?
60s,
like
50, I think.
The 60s?
Like manned landing, I think.
Right. Which actually, Buzz Aldrin was one of the first two humans to set foot on Mars.
It's pretty crazy.
Fun fact. But, I mean, it's... So, Ryan, be the pessimist here. Be the critic. Like, what do you think? Do you think we're going to be able to get to Mars by 2026? Do you think it's feasible? Do you think it's necessary? Like, be a devil's advocate.
Well, I just, maybe I have seen too many movies and shows that have colored my perspective to some capacity. Part of it is also a little ignorance. I don't know that much about engineering and physics and all those different kinds of things enough to know that it's possible, but what we do know from my understanding is that a lot of it's been done by modeling, and even though we have extremely sophisticated modeling compared to what we did even a few decades ago, I just feel like you still can't account for every scenario, and I'm fearful that sending a bunch of people, even a handful of people that have even accepted that risk, that it could just turn out badly. And it could turn out really well, and we could have accounted and everything goes according to plan. But I think it's challenging. And frankly, like, I understand the intention and purpose of wanting to go to Mars, but at the same time, like, it's not a ripe planet for habitation at this point. Like, it's not set up that humans could just go there and live. Like, there'd have to be a ton of investment from not only a financial standpoint, but also a cultural standpoint, especially if you want to send lay people up there. Like, it's one thing to send astronauts, right? Like, but astronauts come home. Like, if you're sending...
Hopefully.
Right. Well, I mean, the intention is that they come home. But if we're colonizing Mars, and I know that's not the intention of what you were asking, but ultimately, like, if we're planning on colonizing Mars, that's an extreme challenge. And then you get into politics and those different kinds of things with a bunch of different countries. One thing that I'm a little scared of is the fact that we've created a space force, which I think is ridiculous and unnecessary. Like I feel like to understand the limitations of like defending your satellites and things like that, that's fine. But thinking that there's going to be a sole proprietor of like someone that's going to own the moon and like we'll have little
Right.
sections of the moon that we can mine or something like that.
Dominion in space.
I just feel like that's where it gets tricky. And as volatile as everything is on our planet right now, I don't even really want to think about what kind of challenges and conflict will arise with that. Because I feel that, anyway, I'm kind of drooling on, but those are some of my concerns, is not necessarily the whole getting there part of it, but what happens after that happens.
Right.
What's next? And what's the purpose of it, right? Like, is it just to go there to see what it is? Is it a scientific exploration, or is this viable? And not that it has to be mutually exclusive, but like what is the actual intention? Is it a claim of accomplishment from a company? Like, oh, well, we sent people to Mars. You know, I don't know. And I don't think it's necessarily as binary as that, but those are just some thoughts. What about
Right.
you?
So I think it's a mixture of a whole bunch of things. It's human ambition. It's human exploration. And but I think you kind of hit on something there where, who's gonna own Mars? Who's gonna be in control of Mars? Who's gonna be in control of the moon? Our petty kind of like our human borders and power struggle is going to continue up into space, because they very much are part of our situation down here on Earth. We are not a united world, which is, it's kind of wild considering how many like world wars we've gone through
Yeah, in the
and
past 115 years.
right. How much destruction, we've kind of wreaked on each other. We're not united. And it looks pessimistically, it looks like there might be another great global conflict in the near, not maybe not near, but in the future. And what is the purpose of going to Mars if it's not for the benefit of us all?
Well, and to speak to that point a little bit about like collaboration, I feel like it's been a mixed bag in the scientific community. Not that I'm some sort of expert on it, but from what I do know, the scientific community is really there. It's been a mixture of conflict and competition and collaboration. And when it comes to space, like there's something to be said that we have an international space station. There's something to be said that, we have collaborated within the past year to develop a bunch of different viable COVID vaccines. Like there is collaboration when crisis happens, but within the scientific community, it would have to be kind of like a moral play to the greater good, where it's like we're going to explore space so we can understand space better, not so I can be the first person to do it. And I think that there is a possibility for that, and I'm optimistic that that can happen. But since it's just like
Me too.
uncharted territory, it's difficult to have a whole lot of confidence around any of it because, yeah, we just haven't
Yeah,
really had to think about it.
because and I think I think that kind of hits on a fact that we as humans will never be successful travelers of the stars, or we won't be able to do that until we all come together as one. Like unless we're united, we put our resources and our minds and our goals together. Because little, like small little individual companies can do things like this, but unless we want to meaningfully explore our solar system or beyond. Like, there's really not a whole lot of chance for that unless we work together on it, which is kind of like that sounds like a pipe dream.
Yeah.
But it is, like, all pessimism aside, it is really cool what is planned by, like, the private companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic. I know there's a lot of talk of, like, putting a base on the moon so that we can, like, observe our solar system better, and some people even want to mine the moon. There's a huge project by being funded by Google right now that wants to start a asteroid mining company. So we send out, like, mostly using the moon as kind of like a base, because it's a lot cheaper to send out spacecraft from a place that doesn't have a huge gravitational pull or atmosphere. And then going out and mining asteroids that are just absolutely rich with like gold and platinum and, like, all kinds of rare earth metals that we have a short supply of here in this world, and that are, you know, fought over pretty intensely. Yeah. And it's like the probes and the explorative missions that we have scheduled for, like, Jupiter's moons and going to Saturn and even as far out as Pluto. Like, there's a lot of really cool things that are not just on the drawing board, but, like, actually planned for the near future.
Yeah, viability.
It's really cool. Yeah. It's cool that we are living in a time where, you know, we are actually meaningfully looking to the stars with purpose. Like, it's not just a dream that one day will start spreading around the solar system. Like, it could happen in the next, like, 100 years.
Yeah, we just have to live to be 200 to be able to witness it.
Right. Yeah, hopefully we'll have the medical advances where we'll all get our 3D printed organs and our bionic bodies, and we're good to go for the next 300 years.
Yeah, right. how much do you think this focus on traveling in space will impact the investment of preserving and curbing some of the climate change effects that are going on right now? Because I don't think you have to pick one or the other. I think you can do both, but I feel like there's a much bigger focus on an international level on, well, it depends on where you look, but
right,
something to be said that the United States in total, in sum, there aren't a whole lot of private companies that have, other than, like, electric cars, that are really innovating on at the level that they are from a, like, space exploration perspective. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's, like, two groups of thought on the fact that we shouldn't be so focused on Mars, because we need to get our own world in order, and we need to, like, look to preserve our own world. But there's also that thought that, you know, going to Mars and learning about the planet and learning about maybe changing the planet and influencing the planet could help us in wondrous ways to learning how to control our planet, you know, to slow the process of global warming, or maybe even reverse it to, I don't know, even more wildly controlling weather, controlling
Jim, climate. I'm actually controlling the weather. I've got a machine in the basement that I use.
Yes.
I turn the dial and then it starts shaking and I put clothes in it. It starts to rain.
Ryan, can I?
Then flooding happens. Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
I love that. But I think any time that we are we kind of put our minds to things and push the envelope, we can learn new things about like physics and meteorology and biology that can help us with the future, with global warming, with just bettering the human race in general.
Well, and with and most innovation is really just one idea applied from one field applied to a different field that most people hadn't really thought of, or if they
ideas build
and
on
so
each other.
So if we have a different point of like of reference for that conversation, like you're saying, then it could be really beneficial for figuring out some other practical ways to combat climate change and also do the exploration that we're talking about. Cool.
Right. I think it's always a good place for humans to be to always be pushing the envelope, be exploring more and trying to like push our understanding of our universe that we live in.
Absolutely. Do you mind if I share a quote with you that I really like? It's a space quote that I am just a huge fan of. It's not directly related to space, but it's just, I think, a really nice way to think about. It's from Augustine Mandino, and he says, "I will love the light for it shows me the way, yet I will love the darkness for it shows me the stars." That's one of my favorite quotes about space, and I read it a long time ago, but for some reason, I couldn't remember exactly who said it, so I wanted to be sure, so I looked it up.
Sometimes, like, the best quotes are the ones that are very simple and succinct.
But I
like
think that, I mean, not to draw too many different parallels or use that as an analogy for other things, but it is kind of like what we're talking about, like, your perspective and the context around the information that you're using to evaluate the world around you, it is important. And something as simple as looking at things at different ways of different levels of light in a room can be helpful. But yeah, so that was something that I wanted to share. Thanks for letting me do that.
I liked it. All right. Well, shall we move on to
let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Sounds good.
It's Jim and he is being kind.
He's being the kindest. But not nearly as kind as Ryan.
He's being the kindest man in the land.
But Ryan's the one with the plan. Speaking of which, our Be Kind this week
is Be Like a Star, Shine Bright Like a Diamond.
Shine Bright Like a Diamond.
But but seriously, Jim, let's talk about what our Be Kind is.
Yeah, we should talk about what our Be Kind is, Ryan.
You wanna go ahead and lead off on the discussion.
So Ryan and I thought the Be Kind this week should be kind of more of an interior Be Kind. So I know I speak for Ryan here. We've, since we were kids, have always looked to the stars. We have very active imaginations. We've read a lot of science fiction and watched a lot of science fiction. And it's always been our hope and our dream to maybe one day be astronauts or travel in space. And we haven't given up on that yet. So I think it's important to not let go of your childhood dreams, even if they may seem impractical.
Yeah, because the level of possibility can change throughout your life. And so I think this, I'm going to give another quote, but I think this it actually does encapsulate what we're trying to say with the Be Kind today. This is from Stephen Hawking. It goes, "Remember to look up at the stars and now down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious. And however difficult life may seem, there's always something you can do and succeed at. It matters that you don't just give up." So yeah, keep your eye on something that you care about. And yeah, if you wanted to be in space and travel to Mars, that's a very high possibility in our lifetime. So you just need, from SpaceX's website, I think you just need like $1 million or something like that.
Just $1 million
Nothing
and
big.
probably sign a waiver that will make them
Absolve them of any sort
right
of liability for your
death,
whereabouts.
abduction, incarceleration by alien powers, all that stuff.
All the good things. Speaking of aliens, Jim and I are going to do an episode on aliens at some point, so
Right.
look forward to that.
We're gonna
Do you have
put our
anything
tinfoil
else?
hats on and go to town.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add before we get on to the recommendation?
I do not. That was a very awesome Stephen Hawking quote. I think it was super spot
I
on.
never heard it before. Yeah,
I
when I was
haven't either,
doing
and I liked
research
it.
to find that other one, I stumbled across that too. So, all right, well, we will be right back with recommendation.
It's the recommendation.
Nation, Jim and Ryan.
Ride dizzle, fashizzle, manizzle.
Frizzle.
I'll stop there. For whistle.
All right, so in the spirit of cooking things, as we sometimes do,
Sometimes.
I wanted to share a recipe that you can really enjoy at any point of the year. But if you are a chicken enthusiast and you also enjoy the taste that accompany most Hispanic food, this recipe is for you.
So by Hispanic food, are we talking like South Americans,
Oh, like, well,
American,
most, I say these are pretty
Spain?
universal spices, which is why I was intentionally generic with how I described
Anyway, continue.
it. This recipe is called slow cooker salsa verde chicken. And the ingredients are as such. You get chicken thighs, jarred salsa verde, or if you want to be adventurous, you can make your own. Although I won't know exactly how to do that, so you'd have to find that out on your own. You want green chilies, garlic, jalapeno, garlic, more garlic,
Little extra
onion,
garlic.
cumin, scallions, cilantro, salt, lime juice. And then your any combination of rice and tortillas, queso fresco, avocado, kind of just whatever you want to serve with it. I personally have eaten this recipe with chips and have put it in like almost kind of like a taco type thing. But really just however you can eat it with a fork. It's however you want to do it. So basically you just combine all of the ingredients in a slow cooker. And it takes about, if you want to do it the slow cooker way, it takes about 5 hours or so, but it's extremely, extremely, extremely good and very flavorful. You just put all the stuff in. Beauty of the slow cooker is you just set it for cook time on low and walk away and come back and enjoy. And you just use a few forks to kind of shred the chicken out.
'Cause it's that tender.
Yep. And it is very, very good. And I'll share the recipe link in the show notes. But yeah, pretty simple, pretty basic, but nonetheless really flavorful. And that comes from New York Times Cooking.
Oof, good stuff there.
So that's the recommendation for this week.
Well, I think I'm gonna have to give that a try, but I'm gonna be adventurous and see if there's an instant pot recipe out there, because I just recently acquired one thanks to Ryan and Catherine. That was a very nice
Ah.
graduation slash Christmas present from you guys,
Well.
and I will give this recipe a try. It sounds delicious. I love salsa verde. I love green chilies and goes well with chicken
Yeah, it's
and pork.
extremely, extremely, extremely good. Yeah, so that's it for this episode. Jim, do you have anything that you want to say before we break for the week?
Bring on the aliens.
Bring them on. With
Hopefully
that
they're
being
friendly.
said, that is your prime directive. All right, everybody, have a good rest of the day. Enjoy your week, and we will be putting out another episode within the next week and a half or so. The next week is a holiday, so Jim and I will be figuring out when it makes the most sense to put another one. But if we don't hear from you or you don't listen to any episodes before the end of the year, have a happy holiday season. Enjoy your time with anybody that you spend the time with, and be safe and healthy, and have a happy new year.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Hey, everybody, thank you for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoy listening to it as much as Jim and I enjoy making it. If you'd like to subscribe, we will be sending out future content within the coming weeks, months, and years. So feel free to do that, and we'd love to have you around.
And Ryan, don't forget, we're on social media.
Oh, that's right. We are on Twitter at expandmind, be kind, and that is the letter B. And then we are also on Gmail. If you want to send us an email, it's expandyourmindandbekind@gmail.com.
Yeah, send us questions or any thoughts that anyone may have, and can't wait till the next episode.
Like Dr. Dre.